B-Pod Studios.
Sarge here.
Yeah,
I can't hear.
From the town fair tower.
Chance, Chance,
the home of the Boston Bruins.
Chance, the same.
WBTFM HD1 Boston 98.5, the Sports Hub, the Beasley Media Group Station. Thanks for starting your day with Toucher and Rich.
Why are you doing this to me?
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Up top, here's Hamilton. Trying to feed it out in front. Here's Bergeron. Might have a breakaway. Over the line, 2-on-1, right circle. Threads it out in front. Backhand. They score! That was Dan Heinen, who shoveled it by Mrazek at the near post, and then he got buried by two different Hurricanes. Make it 6-0 Bruins.
Sarge here.
Yeah,
I can't hear the sound of that thing. That 98.5, the Sports Hub, we're Toucher and Rich. Stu Grimson, I enjoyed watching in his time in Detroit.
The Grim Reaper?
Was that the nickname?
That was the nickname.
Well, he played for 14 years. He's at the NHL Network. He's an analyst, and you can watch him on NHL Now today at 4:30, plus NHL Tonight, which will air live before and after every Stanley Cup playoff game. Stu joins us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. He, by the way, is also, he's got a law degree, and he's been with the Players Association. He's a man of many talents. Mr. Grimson, hello, sir. You join us on the Volkswagen Expert Hotline.
Hey, great to be with you guys. Wow, you've really done your homework. You read right to the bottom of the Wikipedia page.
That's right. I get a one sheet in front of me, and I'll tell you what, I read it like a sumbitch.
Right to the bottom of the... Yeah, nobody gets to the third paragraph of the Wikipedia page ever. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to ask you a couple questions about fighting because, again, I was in Detroit in the summers where you for a couple of years that you played there. And so, you know, there was a guy, Robbins, that used to play for the AHL. Bobby Robbins, that used to play for the AHL affiliate here, and he basically made his living fighting. And then he got called up to the NHL, and I used to talk to him, and he had, like, a great deal of trouble trying to get in the mindset to fight, and he was like an animal. Was that the case with you? Was it hard to get out there and know that you were going to have to at some point maybe have a fight?
You know, it's you make a great point. The mental challenge of doing that job is probably as difficult, as taxing as the physical challenge. You know, it's imagine hand-to-hand combat night after night after night, 82 games a year at the NHL level. You know, and back then, I like to refer to it as a time when the dinosaurs roamed the earth, guys my size, 6'5", 6'6", 240 pounds. You know, you're tangling with some big, mean hombres, and, you know, any one of those guys, any heavyweight enforcer beats any other heavyweight enforcer on any given night. So it was a lot to get up for that. I found, guys, that it was easier to do that as my career went on, probably because you're gaining the mental strength, the, you know, the maturity as you evolve from your 20s into your early 30s. So that changed for me. It became easier, but it is, at the end of the day, the point is well taken. It's a really hard role to play. Many, you know, interestingly, many people refer to that role, that enforcer type role. It's one of the hardest roles in all of professional sport. And having lived it, you know, I wouldn't argue.
Yeah, because you had Probert, Domi, Koser. I mean, you had a lot of guys. You could make an argument when you talk about your size. You could make an argument that that's probably was the toughest era in the NHL for fighting.
Oh, I think so. There were, you know, when I broke in, there weren't many guys my size, but by the middle stages of my career, it seemed like every team had a guy or two sometimes my size. And really, they were, you know, the rosters were populated with these guys for that reason. It was to make, a little easier for the skill players, the smaller players to do what they do. And if you didn't have one back then, other teams played you differently, and they took liberties with your skill guys. So, without question, I think it was a unique era. And oddly enough, today there's a lot of nostalgia around that era. You know, I know there's a pretty significant part of the hockey viewing population that would welcome elements of that era back. But at the end of the day, that's another discussion. I think the game's in a good place.
It is in a good place, but do you think, and then I want to get to the matchups in the conference finals, but do you find that hatred between teams has gone down? I mean, if you look at those Colorado Red Wing games, I mean, they truly hated each other. And I remember when Lemieux turtled after he had hit Draper. Do you find that there's still that amount of hate between teams in the NHL?
Yeah, I don't know. And I would make this one point, and I've made it about, you know, the guys I played against throughout my career. Yes, we played fierce. Yes, we played angry. Yes, we played on the edge, and adrenaline gets the best of you sometimes, and you do stuff that, you know, you might characterize as overly aggressive. I don't know that it was ever actual hate one man to another, but the game seemed to be a lot more fierce back then. And, you know, I think a couple of things. One, the rules have changed and kind of created a situation where our game has evolved into a faster, the skill level is higher. So we're, you know, you're talking about two eras of the game that I think are in sharp contrast to one another. But I think that is a fair point. You know, it's not as fierce as it was at an earlier time.
All right, finally, Stu, last question about fighting, but I'm fascinated by this. When Sean Thornton became a friend of the show, I was kind of shocked that a lot of these guys who would go out on the ice on a daily basis or like, you know, very frequently would fight, didn't have any kind of fighting training. And I think it took Sean Thornton to go and start taking boxing lessons to convince the rest of the players to take lessons with him. How many of the guys that you knew that were fighters actually were just self-taught brawlers and didn't really know how to classically fight or take any kind of fighting lessons?
Yeah, it's a great question. My anecdotal experience is that a lot of guys that did what I did had some training in the actual skill of boxing. For me, I spent I'm from Western Canada, grew up in a little town called Kamloops, British Columbia, and I got onto a great martial arts club. It was called White Crane Kickboxing, and I used to train there every summer in my, say, middle to late teens, even early 20s. And I don't know that it necessarily translated onto the ice. Of course, you're not using your feet when you're on the ice. But just in terms of the hand skills, it gave me a lot of confidence. It was a great workout. And I found that there was, you know, a good bit of insight into how I could be more effective on the ice. So, you know, I think that most guys at some level, I used to hear that Bob Probert and Joey Kosher, while they were there together in Detroit, they used to work out at the world famous Kronk boxing club in downtown Detroit.
Yeah, Tommy Hearns's gym. All right. So now, do you ever fight Billy Jaffe? Because he's annoying.
Billy Jaffe is dumb, but he's not stupid.
I've known Billy for several years.
He's a good friend of the show, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a good friend of mine. I would say that to his face, but no, I'm kidding. That was never Billy Jaffe's game. So the answer is unequivocally no, I never fought Billy Jaffe.
All right, so Rob Brind'Amour has come out and said that his team is mentally fatigued, that the pressure of having to spend the second half of the season, you know, having to fight every night to make the playoffs. He said in game two, he saw that mental fatigue. But they've had a lot of time off, and they kind of, you know, flew through that Islanders series. What is your take on what Brind'Amour had to say?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I sure wouldn't be one to second guess a coach in Rob's position. I mean, who knows his players, those players, better than Rob Brind'Amour? So, you know, there may be something to that, but I'm with you guys. You know, they've had a good, a significant amount of rest. I mean, I could not have been more surprised that they disposed of the Islanders in four games in the second round. So they've had, to me, they had a substantial layoff. perhaps to me, if it was me and just kind of speculating from afar, a layoff itself can sometimes hurt you. You start to lose that game sharpness the longer you're off the ice, and especially when you're a club like the Carolina Hurricanes, who have had to, they've had really kind of a magic sauce to what they've been able to do. It's been great depth. It's been a super goaltending tandem between Mrazek and McElhaney. But, you know, it's kind of like that. You need all elements of your roster going. And the point I'm making is when that roster is away from the game, you start to lose that muscle memory over time. So for me, it would be less, you know, the effects of an emotionally taxing second half and more the effects of a significant layoff coming out of round two. It's hard to get right back up to game speed again, but the Canes are going to have to find a way to do that if they stand to make this an interesting series.
If you're Brind'Amour, what do you do with your goaltending situation?
I probably go McElhaney. I do. I mean, one, you've been using this tandem almost in equal parts over the course of the year. They've been, you know, kind of a 50-50 rotation. So I don't think you need to be shy of it for that reason. And number two, I think you're at a place in this series where you need somebody to come in and come up with a really dynamic performance between the pipes. In spite of the fact that they're at home and Carolina is really strong at home, they've yet to face Boston on their home ice, on Carolina ice, and that's a different animal. The Bruins are, this is a club just built for the playoffs. So back to the goaltending, I'd give McElhaney a shot. You need somebody to go in there and be dynamic, and better that comes in game three while there's still an opportunity to clamber back into this series rather than making that decision in going into game four when potentially you could be down 3-0, and it's really academic at that point. So for me, I'm rolling out McElhaney in three back in Carolina.
Why is Carolina struggling so much in this series after sweeping the New York Islanders and beating the defending Stanley Cup champions? Is it simply a matter of, you know, water or talent finding its level, or are the Bruins just a particularly tough matchup for them?
I think A and B. I think water finding its level, and certainly Boston is a tough matchup. Let's look at it this way, guys. I mean, Carolina has found a way, has carved out a niche and a berth in the postseason. They've had solid goaltending. They can score with regularity. They've gotten great depth in that respect. I maintain today they're a really strong and up-and-coming decor in the NHL, but in my estimation, they have met their match and more in the Boston Bruins. As deep as the Carolina Hurricanes are, you go back to game two, and I mean, the Charlie Coyle, Marcus Johansson, Danton Heinen line almost single-handedly dismantled that Carolina Hurricanes staff by themselves, and that's the third line for the Bruins. And factor into it, that third line coupled with your third pairing really speak to about 50% or so of the offense from the Boston Bruins. They're getting great depth of scoring as well. And the Bruins, to me, play a really smart, disciplined brand of hockey just in terms of puck management. They don't give you a lot. You've really got to earn that. So, you know, I know I've given you a lot, but to me it really comes down to the Carolina Hurricanes have just never faced this kind of depth, not yet in this postseason.
All right, Stu Grimson going to be at the NHL Network. You can watch him on NHL Now today at 4:30, plus NHL Tonight will air live before and after every Stanley Cup playoff game. Mr. Grimson, thank you so much for the time, sir.
My pleasure, gentlemen. My pleasure. Have a great show.
No, you
right,
too.
You enjoyed yourself tonight. I don't know how you reply to have a great show. I was about to say you have a great
you
show.
You too when you have a show. Yes. So there was something that was just brought to my attention. So Terry Rozier has been doing the rounds on television and for some reason, people want to talk to the backup point guard for a team that got knocked out in the second round.
Best part is when he's on, they have like a statistic line underneath him, average 6 points per game in the playoffs. It's just weird looking at that and going, oh, and you're on a national show. Okay.
Yeah. But for people in Boston, it makes sense because some of the questions that he was asked are about, you know, is Kyrie Irving a good teammate? And he opens up about that. On top of that, there's a couple of things to say about Brad Stevens.
So we will hear all of that in just a moment.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Get the app. Get the Sports Hub. Get Toucher and Rich. Download the Sports Hub app today.
.985 The Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. And Terry Rozier was on whatever the hell the Greenberg show is. And he's there.
Get up.
And as John said, there's a stat line under him the whole time that says he averaged 6 points a game in the playoffs. So.
Well, the craziest thing that's come out over the past couple of days regarding Terry Rozier is that, you know, despite him saying that he suffered more than anybody this season, or he ended up paying the consequences of having someone like Kyrie on the team who's going to play backup, the best story is that, according to Ashrod Blakely, the Knicks are taking a look at Terry Rozier and possibly signing him. How great would that be if they signed Kyrie Irving and they got Terry Rozier? And once again, he's stuck in the exact same situation that he was in when he was with the Boston Celtics. So, I don't know why, but Terry Rozier is a national story, and I guess it's because of Kyrie, and everyone wants to know what's going on behind the scenes. And
No, it's because of his love of reading and horseback riding.
So Terry Rozier was getting interviewed, and they asked him about the team and whether or not they do enjoy Kyrie Irving being around.
From the outside, it appeared at times as though everyone didn't ever quite figure out exactly what their role was supposed to be.
Is that Golic playing the smooth jazz?
He just pops up like, yeah, baby. Why do they play music?
I don't know.
During interviews, I cannot figure it out. I know you want to hear what's going on, but you have to understand how much this bothers Rich and I. Like, take that bass for a walk, baby. Here we go, Terry Rozier.
Who else was on the show? What's his name? The guy who was these Thibodeau. It's Tom Thibodeau over there in the bongos.
Yeah, Thibodeau's just playing the stamps. Got to know a lot about him for that.
Stamp.
From the outside, it appeared at times as though everyone didn't ever quite figure out exactly what their role was supposed to be. Why was that?
I think we all just felt good about it, like having practice, you know, our discussions, you know, film talk. But then every time we get in the game, it's just like, I wouldn't say we wouldn't follow the game plan, but it'd be different. It'd be different. I think we just didn't go through what our goals that we had.
Different in what way? Like, how would it be different on the floor?
You gotta play the guys' tendencies. You still playing with superstars out there, so you gotta adjust to that.
How hard was it for you? Obviously, Kyrie comes back and he's a superstar player and he has the ball in his hands a lot, and that. There's no player who probably lost more opportunity this year in that group of young guys than you did. How difficult was that for you?
I feel like it was very difficult. I think anybody that was in my shoes that can go and start and, you know, go to a game 7 in the Eastern Conference Finals and then come back, you know, we have the season that we have this year. I feel like anybody in my position would say it's tough.
What is it like playing with Kyrie? Watching him from the outside, he seemed to have so many different times this season when he seemed genuinely unhappy. That was from the outside. What was it like playing with him?
You know, he's a great guy, great leader. You know, you just have to adjust to his style. And whatever Kyrie wants done, that's what he's going to show it. That's what he wants done. And you have to adjust to his style of play and how he goes about every game and every day.
How do you think your team did in trying to adjust to his style?
I think guys was getting it, you know, especially towards the end of the season. But like I said, we had come in the game and it'd be a different game plan than what we kind of expected it would come. We went through in practice, so it was like it was
What does that? It's the second time you said that. I'm not sure I'm understanding what you're saying. How was it different on the floor from what it was in practice?
You know, we have our. We had five, the first five, and then we had a second five. And then, you know, when we go out there, I feel like a lot of guys would be mixed up. It wouldn't be the first five and second five. So what we talked about in practice is not what we went through in the game. It was like, all right, we're going to keep Kyrie out there, and we're going to put the other guys out there with him, and we're going to figure it out.
How are you looking at your future this summer?
That's a shot of Brad Stevens. It's
yes,
a big
it is.
Shot of Brad Stevens.
Yes, it is.
There was actually two shots of Brad Stevens, but only one was comprehensible.
Yeah, yeah. I was thinking the same thing at the beginning when he was talking about that, and I'm like, is he crapping on Stevens and the way he had them prepare for a game as opposed to what he actually called when they were playing?
No.
And then later on, he kind of clarified
well,
that.
Well, that's the first thing I'll compliment Greenberg on is that there was absolutely no way to understand what he said the first time.
And then Greenberg had to have him clarify it.
Right.
Yeah, that is, I mean, it sounds like he's protecting Kyrie Irving.
Yes.
Even though he goes, he's a great leader, you know, whatever his mood was, we had to adapt. That doesn't sound like a good leader to me.
No. No, but he's certainly protecting.
He's protecting.
If you were to predict this interview, you would have predicted the opposite. Probably. Is that, who thought going into this you would hear something negative about Brad Stevens? You would think if anything was going to be negative, and there would have to be for him to be on that show.
Okay, so if you're him, are you more pissed at Kyrie Irving, or are you more pissed at Brad Stevens taking that time away from you?
I guess Brad Stevens.
It sounds to
or
me
the
like
team
say,
for
yeah,
yeah and, or you know,
because Kyrie couldn't help it. Like Kyrie can't help it. He was signed on the team, and then he got hurt, and so in Rozier's mind, he's probably thinking, okay, well, you know, you can't yell at Kyrie. He's Kyrie, and he's back. But maybe you can be pissed at Stevens for not giving him more time on the court because maybe he views himself as somewhat of a close to equal of Kyrie.
Well,
you understand what I'm saying?
Well, yes. Like, if you're Rozier, it doesn't benefit you to go after Kyrie Irving because, yeah, like you said, Rozier, and I don't blame him, I don't think his ultimate goal this year was to win a championship. I mean, I think if you could have asked him if he wanted to have a big year and to get paid, I would have felt that way.
He's never once indicated by anything he has said that it's all about winning.
Right.
It's like, this has been hardest on me. My minutes have been taken away. That's somebody who wanted to have a monster year before he hit free agency.
Right. And so, which I don't blame him. I mean, this is you played very well a season ago, and then you come in, and then you're barely getting any playing time.
How much did they offer him? Because they did offer him an extension last year, John Wallach.
Rozier.
Yeah. Rozier was offered an extension.
Right.
Was it like 14 million?
Down. Yeah, I actually think you're close. I'll double check. I think you're in the ballpark, though.
Because I wonder if he's going to get that.
No, I mean, you heard Jeff Goodman say it. I mean,
13 to 15,
yeah,
I think he
said,
was.
Yeah, I mean, 4 years and 60 is not out of the realm of possibility.
And that's what I predicted
Terry
the
Rozier.
Other day. Yeah, I was thinking that's probably the amount of money it's going to cost to get him to play.
Yeah, so he was probably pissed at Stevens the entire year because he wasn't
all of
paid.
That, but the big question is, does all of that go away if and when Kyrie walks and the Celtics come up to Rozier and say, here's 4 years and $60 million, we want you to be our starting point guard?
Yeah, of course it goes away because there's nothing to be upset about. You got paid and you're the starting point guard.
They offered him 12 a year.
All right, so he made the right decision not taking it.
Yes.
Well, we don't know that yet.
Well, I mean,
would imagine.
If it turns out the way we think it's going to turn out, yes, they offered him $12 million a year and he turned it down.
I don't know how you can offer.
And he turned it down less than a year ago. He turned it down right at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, because he doesn't want to be a backup point guard. I mean, he wants to be a starting point guard, and he wants to make money. He doesn't care. The Celtics aren't the issue. It's just getting that opportunity. So if the Celtics come to him and they say, you're a starting point guard, here's this money, I mean, why wouldn't you take it?
Man, I just say, buyer beware. If you're any team other than the Celtics, it's going to offer him $15 million a year. In a four-year contract.
Well, which Rozier do you believe in? Do you believe in the Rozier of last year? Or do you believe in the Rozier of this year who's moody and, you know, I think...
When you say the Rozier of last year...
Yeah.
You're talking about the Rozier of a couple weeks.
No, actually, if you remember when Kyrie went down the first time and had to sit out a few games because his knee was bothering him, Rozier posted, I think, 2 triple-doubles starting for him. I mean, people were surprised by that. But the talent is there. I don't know if the talent's there over 82 games. Any team, including the Celtics, that signs him has to decide, okay, is this a full-time thing or is this an up-and-down thing? And Rozier can be very wild and inconsistent at times. But if you believe in the Rozier of the playoffs and at times during the regular season last year, you give him the 4 years and the $60 million.
Oh, Dan makes a good point, is that Kyrie said, if you want me back, I'm coming back on the 4th. And then Rozier turned down the contract on the 14th. So, of the same month.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So it makes sense. And, I mean, you have to also remember that Rozier, during that run, made a couple spectacular jammeroonies.
Slam-a-lam-a-ding-dongs?
You got that right.
Yep.
Off the backboard. Kapoosh.
What does it sound like?
Kapoosh.
Okay. Okay, I thought that's what you said.
Clank. Boom. All right, Rich, we have the stat coming up. What are some things that we will discuss?
RKK attempts a Gronk spike on Florida PD's head. No. Dustin Pedroia is broken again, and Joe Flacco couldn't care less about the team struggling.
All right, here are the headlines.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Watch Toucher and Rich on Twitch. Follow the Sports Hub on Twitch.tv for live shows and reruns. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the party the finest swine in the land, the harbinger of the apocalypse, the official Hurricanes playoff good luck charm. He is Hamilton!
Corrali leans down for the faceoff against Stalls. Game two of the Eastern Conference Final is underway. Near point now, Johansson with a high slap. Feeds left to the net, fired. They score! Matt Grizzlick at the bottom of the left wing circle with traffic out in front, able to squeeze one by Peter Mrazek. Bruins one, Hurricanes nothing. With a far point drilled out in front, Mrazek the same rebound. They score! Out in front, Johansson can't get the puck to settle. Backs it up, centers it again. They score! Connor Clifton with his first career Stanley Cup playoff goal makes it 3-0 Bruins.
The Bruins are going to the Cup. Let's go!
Backus just stepped into Walmart and floored him. Coyle just trailed Fleury with a check and down he goes.
Bruins lock.
Right wing feed behind everybody as Coyle into the right circle. Hands to Grizzly. Backhand. He scores! Matt Grizzlick, Bruins 4, Hurricanes nothing. He's got two assists today. Sent out in front, Mrazek to save. Rebound, he scores! Krejci sends it across the blue to David Backus, who pounds it in. 5-0 Bruins. Bergeron might have a breakaway. Threads it out in front. Backhand. They score! That was Dan Heinen, who shoveled it by Mrazek. Make it 6-0 Bruins. And the horn sounds. The Boston Bruins demolish the Carolina Hurricanes in game two. They win each of the first two games in the series.
Now it's time to get to the stuff that we couldn't get to. It's the stack.
Someone who's calling themselves Billy Joe from saying that they're from North Carolina wants to talk about hockey. Hello, you've been on hold for a very long time. Hello.
Yeah, 54 minutes, 15 seconds. It's actually, this is Bill from Raleigh. My buddy Bobby Joe had to head to the arena. He couldn't wait that long. So listen, I just got a couple of stats for you, man. I mean, game two was a wash for the Hurricanes, but we're undefeated at home. We've outscored opponents, I believe, like some 27-8.
Did you just say game two is a wash?
Oh, yeah, I just throw that out. Yeah, I throw it out. Like, that game doesn't matter,
he's
man.
He's saying that doesn't matter. No, he's saying that, yeah, the Bruins won by a lot.
Well, yeah, home ice advantage. I understand. Yeah.
It's 22-7. 22-7.
If you go back to game one, I know, regardless, I know we lost, but whatever. We were pretty good for the first two periods, and then, you know, after the McKegg goal, that second goal, we couldn't get anything going.
That's
anyway,
the thing. Wait, hang on. Let me give you my opinion on that. Is that the that was as good as Carolina's going to play in that second period, and they only got a goal out of it and ultimately lost the game. So I would imagine that would take some of the wind out of your sails.
And again, Tuukka's been unbelievable. Yes, everybody knows you run into a hot goaltender, and that's just what happens.
Right.
But I will tell you this. Brendan Moore, he's had a plan all year. He's trusted his little process. I know that word's been overused in sports. But it doesn't. I have a feeling he's going to go back to Mrazek tonight. I just have a funny feeling.
Well, then he's a bad coach.
Yeah, that's not a good move.
No.
Listen. I've been down here for, I don't know, almost 13 years now. I've watched. I'm a Bostonian. I'm a Bruins fan, but I've watched every Carolina Hurricanes game the last, let's say, 6-7 years. They've been awful. And then this guy should have been. Brendan Moore should have been the head coach like 2 years ago. And they just went with Bill Peters, and I don't know why. But anyway, to make a long story short, Bruins are going to lose tonight. They're going to get crushed.
Okay. All right.
And I just have the momentum. I have a funny feeling.
What
like, if
momentum?
You go back to that series against Columbus, Bruins were a little loosey-goosey with the puck.
It's true. So, yeah, they were awful for a while. I mean, they looked really bad.
Especially in Columbus on the road. You know, they tightened it up at home. But I'm just, let's say, I don't know. I'm going to go, probably let's go Hurricanes. I'm going to say 5-2. And then whoever's in goal tonight can serve you guys up some poop sandwiches with a little hot sauce, a little claw, and a little sweet tea on the side. Go Canes!
All right. There you go.
You got the rally cry out.
Except nothing you said made sense.
You know what? I thought this was
going to
be.
Maybe he's right. They'll win by 5-2.
Okay. Maybe they will. Okay. Just his points he was making weren't really the best. Yeah, I don't know what momentum he's talking about.
Okay. Yeah,
and by the way, there was no McAvoy during that first game when, for moments, they looked good.
I think even if McAvoy was there, I mean, that second period was terrible. That just the idea that they got, I thought it was a victory that they got out of that second period just down a goal. I mean, they were so thoroughly dominated. Way more than the first period, which wasn't great.
I want them to win a game. I want Carolina to win one game because I want to see everyone come out and make Fred angry one more time.
Oh, all right. Well,
I'm not angry about the team.
No, get annoyed. It's not about the team. I want to see you get annoyed one more time.
We need another
with
avalanche
the fan base.
Of emails sent your way.
Because you
Carolina
know it's
wins.
Coming. If they win, matter of fact, if they score the first goal tonight, Fred,
you'll get an avalanche
of emails. Let me tell you this, is that obviously, I want the Bruins to win because they're the team here I like the most, and they're also really good for us, and they've been very good to us. So I want that to happen. I am not angry at their fans for anything other than...
You're getting a phone call.
Yeah. And what are you going to do? Sometimes there's an emergency. All right, so I'm not angry about, like, predictions on the series or that Carolina, the team. I'm not angry about any of that. I am completely pissed off that region just crapped themselves when I had the audacity to hang up on some dumb old woe is me beat reporter. That's the only thing. Anything else, if they want to go, hey, if Carolina wins and they go, oh, the Panthers rule and the Bruins suck, fine.
The Canes.
Whatever, the Canes suck. No, Bruins suck.
No, you said Panthers.
Oh, yeah, that's... Same difference. And so, like, and they're like, oh, the Canes rule. That's fine. Like, whatever. Have fun. You know, it's sport. What I didn't like the sanctimonious nature of the idea that if you hung up on somebody and you said, I can't listen to this Southern accent, that would become news that got picked up all over the country. And then there's stupid, the stupid people that reached out. That is what drove me insane. If they lose, I mean, sure, it would be annoying, but I mean, if they lose, the Bruins lose. But I mean, apparently this calmness for a team that's not really overly popular, has become not a columnist, I'm sorry, a beat reporter, is some kind of martyr for the entire region. So that's my problem. But I would prefer a sweep for many reasons, but yes. All right, go ahead.
All right, well, Robert Kraft is having one hell of a day today. He is right now celebrating a massive victory for him. As we mentioned earlier, the judge ruled that the information that was obtained via the traffic stop and the videotape of RKK Naked is going to get thrown out, cannot be used in the court case because they deemed it illegally obtained. The main thing that they quoted on that was that at no point did they use any discretion in stopping and starting the video, even when people were coming in and legally getting massages. And the one thing the judge was most pissed about is that there was at least one woman who came in and was getting a massage. And they said, you specifically told us when you got the warrant that you were looking for men who are getting sexual favors. So to not even stop the tape when you saw a woman come in and start it back up after she left meant that all of this needs to be thrown out. So now it looks like Robert Kraft's team is trying to absolutely do a touchdown dance. And that is, they have filed another motion with the goal of preventing the video in this case from ever being made public. So this is a second filing that has been put in. Now, this is one part of the whole law thing that I don't know anything about. I know that obviously it can't be used in this case. Therefore, I assumed that it just could never be released because it's not actual video evidence that can be filed and obtained. Another weird thing about all this, Fred, is we didn't even talk about this. About maybe Friday or Thursday, did you see the Boston Globe like redacted their request for this video?
I did see that, yeah.
Which I thought was interesting. And maybe it's because they had somehow found out, or maybe someone who was covering the case said, dude, they're going to make sure that this is never going to get out. This is going to be made illegally obtained. And so maybe to save a little face with the Patriots, they said, well, you know what? We ended up taking away that filing, and we didn't.
I can only hope so that the paper of record in Boston would be manipulated.
There's
like
politics
that.
Everywhere.
No,
Fred.
I understand that, yeah. but that's not a good thing.
But it's the only thing I could think of. I mean, why would you redact that?
To be honest with you, I have no idea if that was the case, and it very well will be. That's a very public way of telling people that your news is manipulated.
It does seem that way. It did seem that way.
Right. Well, and listen, if they were taping people and they were supposed to not tape this woman, then God bless it.
It's a win for privacy. I mean, that's the one thing. I mean, they went in there.
It is a win for privacy.
So, I mean, a lot of people are saying, too, is that, oh, just wait till TMZ gets their hands on it. As I said before, there's no way any reputable company is going to release this thing now that it's been illegally obtained, because you're going to get sued just like Gawker did, and they are no longer around.
And I will tell you that, and he's got more money than the guy that funded Hulk Hogan.
He has more money than Peter Thiel? I thought Peter Thiel was like worth like $7 billion or $8 billion.
All right. They're both worth billions.
But they're worth a lot, yes.
But, I have no doubt in this day and age that if you really wanted to, there will be a time where you can see the video. Now, you might have to know where to go and all that stuff, but something like that, enough people saw it. It's like digitized. You know what I'm saying? It's not a VHS tape. Like, I have a feeling that if you so wanted, that there will be a time where you'll be able to see it. But you really have to want to see it. I mean, the fapping happened. I mean, people broke.
But that guy got in huge trouble. They found him.
Yeah, yeah. Well, no. I mean.
So does
hacking into, you know, a bank's data system. People do this stuff for some reason I don't understand. I mean, the guy did the fappening. I mean, he didn't just keep it for himself. He released it. There's computer dudes that want to just prove they can do stuff.
Sure, yeah.
So, I mean, yeah. And then if you get caught, you get in a lot of trouble. I would not suggest doing it. But, I mean, I bet you someone does. All right. Well, anything else?
Yeah. I mean, I thought you were going to take a quick break.
No, we'll just take it to 50.
All right. Well, you know who kind of rules is Joe Flacco, because he doesn't care anymore. So Joe Flacco now obviously on the Denver Broncos, and he was asked about, hey, listen, are you going to kind of take these young guys under your wing and, you know, teach them the ropes?
Listen, I got so many things to worry about. I'm trying to go out there and play good football. I'm trying to go out there and play the best football of my life. So as far as a time constraint and all that stuff, I'm not worried about developing guys or any of that. You know, that is what it is. And like I said, I hope he does develop. But I don't look at that as my job. My job is to go win football games for this football team.
I love it.
He's Brett Favre. He's Brett Favre.
I really don't care.
Hey, Aaron
That's their
Rogers.
Problem.
Go screw yourself.
He knows he's on his way out of any of these guys do anything. The way I'm looking at it here, I don't think he counts against the cap. None of this money's guaranteed. I mean, he's playing for his livelihood. He's 34. He's not going to sign a 4-year contract to play anywhere else. Baltimore gave up on him.
Yep.
And Denver only has him because they're desperate for a starting quarterback while they develop another starting quarterback.
Not only did Baltimore give up on him, but Baltimore gave up on him for, if not the last pick in the first round, close to it.
I wouldn't be surprised if John Elway sat him down and said, we only need you for like a year, maybe 18 months tops.
All right.
And Flacco's like, all right, fine. Well, don't expect any help from me then.
He's fat Hercules. Remember, he doesn't even, not even trying anymore. He's like, yeah, I don't really care about I just, I'm here for a check.
I mean, they jettisoned you for Lamar Jackson, who doesn't seem to me to be the second coming of...
You had to do that, though. Flacco's not who he used to be.
You can get rid of Flacco, and it's great. But to put it in other terms, I mean, they didn't get rid of him for Baker Mayfield.
Baker Mayfield's part of the Tom Brady crew.
That must have hurt to say.
Because I'm going to follow it up, or Sammy D. I didn't want to just go Sammy D.
Interesting that you put Mayfield first, though. That was good.
I did it as a tactic so I could just jam in Sammy D.
I see.
But, you didn't give up on him for a blue chip guy. You gave up on him for someone who you're not certain is going to, be able to adapt to the NFL game.
So I love who he's become. I like it. He doesn't care. Another guy who I'm a huge fan of his personality would be Joel Embiid, who right now is probably pretty happy that his coach Brett Brown's going to stick around. There was speculation after the 76ers got bounced that he was going to be gone, but Joel Embiid actually testified that he liked Brett Brown and thought that he was, a good coach. And so somebody asked Joel Embiid, what do you think about the process and where the process is?
Losing the game that way. A lot of things go through your mind and it sucks. I don't know. I can't explain it. It just sucks.
Yeah, and then he goes on to say, I don't give a damn about the process.
Yeah, no.
Joke, I think, ended a long time ago.
Yeah.
The process.
I think this is, Joel Embiid's a great player. Top 15 player in the league. And poor Brett Brown. Brett Brown took a beating for 4 years. Just waiting and... He finally has his team, and they've pretty much maxed out. No one expected him to beat Toronto. No one expected him to take Toronto to 7.
Yep.
And people expected him to do better against the Celtics, but no one expected necessarily for them to blow them off the floor. So they've been getting better. And Brett Brown has overseen all of it. Why would there even be a question to bring him back?
I don't know.
Hey, New York weather guy, or Charlotte weather guy, what did you think of Joe Flacco's response?
Ooh, sassy, I like it.
Yeah, that is... All right. Well, that happened. Okay, everybody, have a great day. Zolak and Bertrand are next. Bye.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.